You're listening to Rocket Knight.
This is Charisse with Rocket Knight, and this evening we are in Royal Oak, Michigan, and we are speaking with Melanie and Mike of the Snapcat Bandits. Hey guys, how's it going?
Oh, it's going great. Thank you.
Hi, thanks for having us. It's nice to be here.
Now, you all are a duo, but when you play out in clubs, you usually have a bass player, correct? You want to talk about you guys being a duo, or what's the deal?
Yeah, we our project formed in 2023, and Melanie and I have been playing together for a long time, and we decided that because we'd done lots of tribute shows in the years previous to that, through the pandemic, we talked about getting back to original music. And so what we decided to do is, I think long about early 2022, we started writing some material, and it kind of went there as a springboard for us to move forward and eventually record our first EP. Being a duo, it gives us more flexibility when we record. We don't have to rely on anyone else as far as input is concerned, because I usually write 80% of the music and then bring it to Melanie, and Melanie will help finish writing the songs and interject more ideas into it. So that's one of the benefits of being a duo. However, when we go out and play on stage, it's nice to have a bass player, a friend of ours that we use from time to time when they're available. We've got a guy, his name is Alex, that jams with us. So we like to go out, in most cases, as a power trio. When we don't, and there have been times when we've played as a duo out, we generally have a second amp that's more bass heavy on one side of the stage. And my setup, because I play guitar and sing, I have more of a treble guitar heavy setup on the other side of the stage to kind of help fill and round out the sound. And the differences between being a duo on stage and a trio is, with a duo, you've got to do a lot more work to engage the crowd and be more energetic on stage. So Melanie and I, we've honed our craft over the years as far as our stage performance is concerned and how much energy we're able to exude towards the audience and engage them. When we have a trio, we can actually bounce off Alex, the guy that we jam with, and it's a little bit easier for us, but we still keep up that same energy as though we're a duo. So that's kind of the differences, pros and cons to being a duo and then being a trio for our live performances.
Right. As a trio, we're gelling more and more all the time with Alex, because he has been, we used to play with him years and years ago as a trio, but he got out of music for a while, you know, raised his family and everything, and now he's coming back in. So he's kind of stepping back in with us. And so I think the last time we were on stage, I felt like the three of us were really gelling very well together.
Two things come to mind, of course, when I hear the name Snapcat Bandits. I'm sure everybody thinks it's Snapchat, right?
Yeah, we get that. Everybody wants to say Snapchat because it rolls right off the tongue that way, but it is Snapcat, and we do have a reason for the name.
Yeah, Melanie came up with the name Snapcat initially, and I think her perspective was that because I write songs that I'm like snapping an idea out of the air, and so
he's the snap cat. He's the one snapping the idea out of the air and bringing that back down to our world, and it becomes a song.
Right. And so we were Snapcat through our tribute years, and then when we formed the original project, we decided to add the name Bandits to it because we were looking at, you know, possible copyright issues and business issues and things of that nature. And so Melanie suggested Bandits, and I said, well, yeah, because she also had the logo that went with it, and I thought that Bandits and the logo was kind of like, it was a perfect fit. So when you said the name Snapcat Bandits, it just kind of was it kind of just was a perfect fit at the moment, so we just went with it.
So we're the bandits that go out there and snap songs out of the universe.
Sounds good to me. When I first heard about you guys, of course, Melanie, you play the drums, and Mike, you play the guitar and sing. White Stripes, the Gories. Do people say that or think that you guys are kind of like that? I mean...
Actually, no. Because we're a duo, I mean, we've thought of all the great duos of the last, two, three decades that have come through. Like you mentioned the White Stripes and other bands of that nature and the Gories and things like that. But, you know, we've gotten more comparisons to Soundgarden in the last month than any other band. Yeah, when we started, we got a lot of Nirvana comparisons, when we were first getting together.
Not in the last number of years.
But more recently, like I said, we've gotten more Soundgarden comparisons, and I didn't think that we sounded like Soundgarden, but recently I went back and started listening to some of their older music from the 90s, and a lot of their vocal phrasings that Chris Cornell used to put together and a lot of the riffs and things, I guess when you do match up, there could be some comparisons. It wasn't supposed to be like that, but if that's what people think about us, I'm okay with it because I think Soundgarden was a great band. And
yeah, it's a good compliment when people say that.
Yeah, I take it as a compliment more than anything else when people give us those kind of comparisons. So, but as far as a duo is concerned, we don't have like that duo kind of gimmick, like some duos have had in the past. I think maybe we just stand on our own merits and see where it goes as far as that's concerned.
Did you happen to listen to a lot of grunge? Do you think maybe it's subliminal that your music sounds that way?
Yeah, there's a good chance because
that's a very good chance.
because when I was first building my encyclopedia of guitar tools, when I was learning guitar and building that and listening to different influences, I think I counted many different ones from the 90s. I think I started with Nirvana and Silverchair from Australia, and then I can think back to PJ Harvey. But then in the more recent years, I started getting into the Ramones, and I started getting into band from South Africa, Seether, and things of that nature. So I think our color palette has expanded over the years to develop more of an original sound that gets away from grunge. I haven't gotten people saying all the time, hey, you guys sound like a grunge band and stuff. We'll get it every now and then.
We got away from it, finally, yeah. I think. I mean, this is a new project, and it does not sound like grunge, I don't think. But some people still hear it in there. I think they can hear it in there. A lot of it is, I guess, the added guitars that Mike puts over the top, take the grunge feeling out. Yeah, and I think there's a couple of songs that I was even surprised we just recently recorded, and they were actually older songs that we brought forward, and I was extremely surprised that they did not sound like grunge when we were finished with them, because that's where they started.
Yeah, I think more often than not, we've gotten more punk rock comparisons in the last few years, because any band can put three chords together, jam it out, and do a lot of screaming, okay, and they can call it a song or whatever. But I think for us, our ethics stand on the punk side of things, because we're a grip it and rip it kind of band. And the way we write songs, we use a lot of energy and influences from Iggy Pop, Joey Ramone, Kurt Cobain, Sid Vicious, and Johnny Rotten. Even The Jam, a great 70s English band. I love Paul Weller and a lot of what they've done. I used to listen back to a lot of their early records. In the City was a very influential song that gave me the inspiration and energy to lean more towards the punk rock side of things. And so I think that's where a lot of our foundation comes from when we're talking in terms of where our music, initiates and originates from.
The energy is definitely punk rock. When we get on stage, it's you know, the energy we bring into the stage is like, I guess our mentality, our mindset is there. It's at punk rock, you know. So even though we might be playing a song like Lonely Highway, which really doesn't fall on that side, it really ends up portraying sometimes a little bit that way.
So possibly when you record it, it has a certain vibe or sound, but when you play live, you put aggression into it?
Yeah, I believe we do.
Yeah, it's almost like flipping a switch. And we've talked about, you know, just getting, it's not necessarily getting into character. It's just who you are when you're on stage. I mean, I think nothing of kicking a microphone over at the end of the set and rolling around on stage with my guitar. I mean, you know, if you're feeling it, do it. That's what I say. You can't play it safe all the time.
A couple weeks ago, we kicked over my drum set.
Yeah, you can't.
Well, I didn't.
Well, see, the thing is, you can't play it safe on stage all the time. If you want to get noticed, it's one thing. But I mean, if you stay true to who you are, and that's what you do, sometimes you have to do things on stage that you normally wouldn't do in everyday life. And if that's part of your persona and who you are, why not show it to people? I mean, it's okay. Rock and roll is all about shaking things up. It's about taking chances, breaking rules and barriers, and getting in your face. That to me is what rock and roll is.
You're not exactly doing banking or whatever. You're supposed to be aggressive. I mentioned the Gorries and White Stripes. Of course, those are Detroit bands. You mentioned Iggy Pop. Let's look at punk, MC5. The hardcore music really started in Detroit. Do you think growing up here molded your music or who you are?
I would say part of it, to be honest with you. I think Wayne Kramer did a hell of a job being a trailblazer to inspire younger musicians to explore the unsafe side of rock, because the more safe that you stay, the less of a chance you're going to make any kind of mark for yourself or anything as a musician. And I think most musicians, I think they aspire higher than most to do something memorable. The other half I owe to Kurt Cobain, because I was drawn to his music when I was younger. And I think Kurt kept a lot of the punk rock ethics. He loved the Ramones. He loved the Sex Pistols. He loved all of that edgy music that he fueled into his. And I was drawn to that because, well, he's left-handed, only in guitar playing. I'm also left-handed. So I had that in common with him. And growing up, I liked Edward Van Halen a lot. But the problem with Edward Van Halen was that he was doing things on stage and on records that was at a level that I never thought I could attain. So by the time Nirvana came along, Kurt was doing basic 3-4 chord structures, power chords, and I thought, you know, that looks like something that I'd be able to do as well. So I went to a pawn shop in my neighborhood years ago, and I got my first guitar and amp and microphone and a Nirvana songbook, and that's all I needed to get started. So I owe a lot to Kurt Cobain as far as shaping the rest of it, but I think locally, I think there's a lot of inspiration that we have discussed, because without that, you don't have kids
maybe
in the garage.
Knowingly, it's just the Detroit seeps into you somehow. If you notice and you listen to the Detroit bands, they all have that grit, you know. And there's that you know, a lot of all the music sounds very different, you know, and you know, from band to band. But there's this Detroit grit, I think, that goes through there that you can hear quite clearly. And I noticed that it's in our music as well.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of bands, and we wondered if perhaps working in factories or just the automotive industry had something to do with all the great bands. We come from Florida up here just to find bands because Detroit is so rich in music. There's dozens of great bands, and we've always been wondering, what is it? Is it the weather? Is it blue collar people? Is it factories?
What are you? The water.
Honestly, though, I think it's a combination of the things that you aforementioned. I think the weather has something to do with it. It's not as cloudy.
We don't get a lot of sun in the wintertime.
It's not as cloudy as Seattle. Okay, for instance, as an example, it's not as sunny all the time as Los Angeles, but here you've got a mixture because there are four well-defined seasons in Michigan. And the winter time can get really bleak and dreary. And if you let it affect you, I think it has something to do with your attitude towards things, okay? And it gets really cold here sometimes. But on the other side,
that makes it tougher, yeah, because it's cold.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, and then it has, then there's a bright sunny side to things in the summertime. I mean, so, I mean, you know, I think, and also too, the types of jobs that are here that people go through, there's a lot of what I would consider a lot of hard labor in a lot of factories, automotive industry, things that really push people's limits, you know, on a daily basis, you know, for 8, 10, 12, 16 hours. And I think that shows the grit and toughness of a lot of people here. And I think people identify with that. And, you know, for one particular sporting analogy, the 2023 Detroit Lions football team embodied a lot of that. And I think that's why people gravitated to the Lions again after so many years, because their coach embodied that grit and hard work, and the team also reflected that too. So I think people in the area really understand that hard work and grit and determination and never giving up. I think that's something that they're drawn to. And I think musicians have the same thing as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's spot on, Mike. I really do.
I often think, too, that Detroit is kind of the underdog. The reputation of Detroit, I mean, we both grew up here. For a long time, it was, quote, the murder capital of the world and all this. And what was it, a few years ago, they tried to change a lot of the reputation. And it's really vibrant now. Downtown is vibrant. They have a lot of nice areas. But I think when you have that reputation, you have... It kind of, I don't know, like you said, it makes you gritty. You have to prove to the world it's not true.
Right.
I think that's a really good analogy, because in the 80s and 90s growing up, you know, as a little kid, my grandmother lived in Detroit, and you'd have to go through a rough stretch of neighborhood to get there. And you saw that on a daily basis of the way the scene was starting to change in neighborhoods. And I think a lot of people really, you know, poo-pooed on Detroit because... people were leaving the city in droves, finding better lives in the suburbs, or there was the analogy about brain drain, about college kids not sticking around after graduation, finding better jobs out of state. So you had people fleeing in that respect. I think a lot of the leadership in Michigan, especially in the Detroit area, people soured on as well too, because there was, you know, there's always been corruption that's been dealing, we've had to deal with. At some level. But I think now a lot of entrepreneurs have reinvested in the city. I think the Illiches were the cornerstone of revitalizing Detroit in a lot of ways, not only through the sports teams, but also through the downtown developments, new arenas, new housing developments. And that leads to people coming back down to find out what Detroit is all about in the surrounding areas. So when you have that, you have entrepreneurs who are willing to invest in a city, the revitalization can't be too far behind. What does that do for future generations? Well, that's a foundation for them to come back and explore what Detroit and the surrounding areas are all about. And then word spreads that people can come to Detroit and they can find things to do on a nightly basis. Great restaurants, great concert venues, great sporting venues. You know, and people are coming back down to live in Detroit more than ever before in the last 40 years, as far as I could tell. So I think, you know, when you have that kind of
investment. The population has increased over the last 10 years.
I think so. When you have that kind of investment, you're going to draw people back to Michigan, and especially the Detroit area. Wayne County has always gotten a bad reputation for that, for people not wanting to stick around and see what it's about. But, you know, hey, Melanie and I have survived it. Other people have survived it, and we've seen it, you know, rock bottom when we were kids. And now it's, you know, I'd say it's the best that it's been in a long, long time. You know,
you get this love-hate relationship with it here, because you hate the winters, you know, and everybody wants to go to Florida, you know, head down to Florida when the winter hits and stuff. But, you know, you always want to come back home.
Yep. Yeah, I think so.
That's true.
It's a great place to live and to raise a family, to work, have friends. It's a great place.
We get a lot of, why are you coming here to visit? Why are you going there on vacation? Unless you've been here, you don't really understand. You know what I mean?
There's a lot of things that we take for granted here. You know, when you're when you live here, you don't realize the culture here. You just are part of it. And you don't, you're like, oh, you know, you're going on vacations other places to see their culture, but you're not realizing that your own city has all of this culture. And if you really stop and look at it and pay attention, you will see, you know, all the art and, you know, all the buildings that are so old, and a lot of them renovated recently and stuff. And it's great just to look at all of that as a whole, you know, and say, wow, that's the Detroit culture.
When you go out to the venues here, do you find it's competitive? Do you find that the bands help each other? What is kind of your experience when you go to venues?
Well, some of the venues more than others, I think, have better sound systems, first and foremost. Because you have to be able to hear yourself on stage and have a great mix. Otherwise, I think you're just going to have a crappy show. I'll be honest with you. I think some of the bands like helping other bands, but I think some bands, they don't. And I think that's
been a knock. Support each other, yeah, and everybody's supposed to stick around, yeah, and support all.
That's been a knock against a lot of bands over the years in the Detroit scene, is that they're more self-absorbed and they don't really care much about the scene, okay? And I think that's always been the case with a lot of bands. And then people in other bands tend to feed off of that information and think, oh, that's the protocol, that's the way to do things.
I see a lot of people banding together, though, and doing shows together, and a lot of bands supporting each other and stuff like that. I see that more now than I have in the past.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. There are certain groups of bands in Detroit that promote the scene, and they do a really good job of doing it. There probably need to be more bands that need to be more proactive in doing that, because that's the only way that you're going to further great music in Detroit. There's some really good festivals that happen. There's usually the Hamtramck Blowout that happens once a year. There's usually, you know, a couple of really good festivals that you can see around. The Uncle Sam Jam in the summertime, that's another good one. I think if bands took the time to actually coddle the scene a bit better and help each other out as far as just being supportive is concerned, I think the scene would grow even better, more exponentially than it has. But again, once you have to get through the self-absorption first. And a lot of bands, I think, are more interested in kind of not doing that. But like Melanie said, you know, she's finding more support amongst a lot of
acts. You just got to look for it. I think you'll get it, yeah, you know, if you just look for it. And I think there's a lot of good bands that can, coexist and support each other. They're, in order to get a scene going here, that has to happen, you know, and you have to do more shows with a lot of, you know, a group of bands.
I speak to a lot of bands up here, and I've noticed at the festivals that they're having more tribute bands, and they're not letting in people with original music. I don't know what the deal is, but what do you have an opinion upon that?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think that a lot of venues sour on original music nowadays because I think more crowds are attracted to the tribute bands. And I'm going to be gentle when I say this. I think a lot of original music in the last 20 to 25 years, and I'll be honest, might not be as good as it was 25 to 30 years ago from some of the other bands. So now what you have is you have this mentality of people who are organizing festivals or running venues are thinking, oh my gosh, tribute bands from the 80s and 90s, that's where it's at. So you know what they do? They organize these particular shows because they know they can draw the crowds, they can charge as much as they want, and they will get the crowds. So original music is competing against tributes. We were in the tribute scene for many years, and so we can see the difference. You know, if, hey, there's a Nirvana tribute night coming to so-and-so, and the house is packed, and we've seen it right before. Okay, so then...
Go to the same place with the
original music.
Advertise.
Crickets. Mm-hmm. Crickets.
Yeah, it's hard to get people to come out. It just is. And I think it's more about what they're used to hearing. Mm-hmm. They want to hear songs that they know well. And it's not that there's anything wrong with the original music at all. I just think that people are just not going out and expanding their musical horizon to learn new songs. There's so many great indie bands, and there are lots around here in Detroit.
Yeah, they're just not giving it enough of a chance to fester, so to speak.
I hear people say I'm so sick of listening to the same old songs over and over and over, and rock is dead. And I'm like, listen, you're just not paying attention. I said, there is a whole scene out there of brand new rock music that's great. And, I can put a playlist together for you of all these Detroit rock bands, and you're going to love it.
The Snapcat Bandits. Do you guys have new music coming out? Do you have an EP? Where could people find your music, and what's on the horizon?
So we've just finished our promotional cycle for our first EP called Shadows and Looks. You can find that on Spotify. You can also find it on our website, snapcatbandits.com, and you can listen to the music in both places there.
Any platform.
And generally any platform, but mainly Spotify. Our second EP, we're starting the promotional cycle. We started on June 28th, not too long ago. And so we're in the promotional cycle for our second EP called Anything and Nothing. There are 5 songs that we'll be promoting as singles over the next coming months. And then for 2025, we started writing earlier this year music for our third EP, which will be out sometime next year. It'll take a turn. It'll get more moodier than the past.
Even the next release is going to get moodier.
Yeah, and so the guitars will be tuned down a bit. We're exploring new topics as far as lyrical content is concerned, and we like what we've put together so far. But I think there's a little bit more to write before we go into pre-production in the fall and start hammering these songs out. And then we'll be back in the studio with our great producer Chuck Alkazian next year to go over the music and eventually put it out. So 2025 looks pretty good for us.
All right, thank you for joining Rock at Night. Now let's listen to the Snapcat Bandits.
Concern, but You're listening to Rock at Night.
The introductory song, Get On Down, is from blues artist Billy Bass Alford. Look for his music at ReverbNation.com.